KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest, writer Graham Yost, tends to work best when he writes pieces that look at both points of view. You could say that was kind of the motive behind the film Speed. Also, behind his film Broken Arrow is definitely what built the show Boomtown, for which he was last here. His most recent series is Justified, which is in its third season on FX. First of all, Graham, welcome back.
Nice to be back, Elvis. Thanks for having me.
And there is a kind of moral relativism for you, where you do look at things from two points of view. And that's something that's been a pretty big theme in your work.
Yeah, you know, go back to a credit that I think appears on IMDb, but I didn't get on a screen credit, was for a movie with the unfortunate title Operation Dumbo Drop.
Dennis Leary.
Actually, that was one of the high points of the thing, was hanging out with him one night. But I remember talking to one of the producers, Bob Cort, and, you know, I've been working for a while. I've been writing for a while, but he said the one thing that I should always think of is, which, remember that everyone is the star of their own movie. And that even the bad guys, they've got a reason for doing what they're doing. They didn't just wake up in the morning and decide to start twirling their mustache. So I really took that to heart. And that sort of that lesson that came in after I'd written Speed, I think it was around the time I was writing Broken Arrow, maybe after that.
But it's very much a part of Broken Arrow, though. I mean, it's just because you basically write points of view for more than one protagonist.
Well, yeah, and we do try and understand the bad guys, even in Speed and in Broken Arrow and, you know, Hard Rain. There was a big switch in terms of who the bad guy is. So always try and honor them, knowing that the bad guys are often the heart and soul of movies like that. You know, Hans Gruber in Die Hard was every bit as important to that movie as John McClane was. But really getting into the importance of acknowledging other people's point of views, that was the reason for doing Boomtown.
I think there is, and I want to talk to you about this, because I think there's a real difference between giving a bad guy time on the show, face time, and offering that point of view. And you've been very specific about that. I mean, going back to Speed, certainly, I mean, Boomtown is built around that.
Yeah.
And when it's one of the things that Elmore Leonard, the creator of Raylan Givens, and if you've read the book Pronto, you basically have a really good feel of the first season of the show. That was kind of a gold mine for you, wasn't it?
I don't know what you're talking about. No, we did. There are certain things where Elmore has just looked the other way, where we're like, you know, remember that showdown in Pronto? Yeah, we're going to take that in our fourth episode. And that little bit of dialogue, we'll appropriate that.
And that Raylan loves ice cream?
Yes, little things like that. And then there are obviously places where we veer dramatically from that. But in terms of the bad guys, listen, one of the reasons why we were happy to go on FX more than, let's say, a broadcast network, is that we knew that, first of all, John Landgraf, the head of FX, had been one of the producers on Karen Sisko, which was, you know, a really good show on ABC, but didn't quite click. And it wasn't, as he would acknowledge, not Elmore enough. And one of the things I knew that he would let us do is spend time with the bad guys. And it's been a very, it has been an evolutionary process on the show. For example, when we shot the pilot, Boyd Crowder died. Walton Goggins' character.
As he does in the short story.
As he does in the short story. And, man, we just had such a great time with him, and he's such a great actor, and it tested really well. And so we decided, okay, this time Raylan missed, and let's keep him on. And that has had a dramatic impact on the show, because he becomes the second character on the show. So we do spend a lot of time with him.
Yeah, that's very much that. And also, that kind of moral relativism of all of Elmore's characters,
mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, that the sense of how much can they forgive themselves.
Absolutely. And they've got they've often got a code. You know, Boyd has a code. And the thing about Boyd is that code sort of changes year by year.
It's fungible.
But he really believes in it. When he's on, you know, when he was a preacher, he believed it. And then he's a robber and he believes it. So, but he does have a code. And you know, Raylan obviously has his code. It's not exactly the legal code But it's legal code adjacent.
I'm close to Graham Yost right now. It's a treatment. He's the creator of the show Justified, which is in its third season on FX. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. For those who haven't quite caught up with the show yet, let me ask you to describe what Justified's about.
Well, based on this character, Raylan Givens, by Elmore Leonard, he introduced him in Pronto and then gave him his own book in Riding the Rap. And he wrote this novella called Fire in the Hole, which takes Raylan from Miami and sends him back to his... where he grew up in eastern Kentucky. And he's a U.S. Marshal, Deputy U.S. Marshal, and he has a reputation of being a little quick with the gun, but is, you know, he would say he'd always give people the option of not doing it, and he'd be very clear. And there's a great scene in the novella where a character points a shotgun at him and he says, well, can you rack a load before I put a hole in you, and gives him the option, you know. But anyway, so Raylan's back to his old stomping grounds, and he hasn't been, in our version, he hasn't been back to Kentucky in 20 years. And in the novella, his father had died from black lung, being a coal miner. In our version, we decided to keep the dad alive and make that part of the story.
Yeah, and also, in Elmore's version, he's got kids.
He's got kids. He's divorced from Winona. There's a stepfather that he doesn't think too much of. And, we decided not to have the kids because I've just felt in television shows where they're the off-screen kids, you have this nagging feeling like your protagonist is the worst father in the world. Frasier Crane never saw Frederick, and he was a horrible dad. So... I just felt, let's not deal with that. Let's just clean it up, focus on the relationship between him and the ex-wife.
Apropos of that, I'll say something I bet you've never heard from anybody. Basically, Raylan dresses about like Frasier Crane. These guys are dressed like Williamsburg hipsters on the show between... you know, between
he did get some kind of best dressed...
Between him and Boyd, these guys are beautifully dressed, by the way.
Yeah, Raylan dresses well without it ever feeling like it's an affectation. His affectation is the hat. Or the hat and the boots.
And the ring.
And the ring and the gun on the hip.
So he has quite a few affectations.
Okay, he's got a lot.
But that's the thing, though. That's one of the things that comes a lot out of Elmore Leonard is people basically define themselves by the way they look. This season we see it in his new nemesis in the show, who definitely defines himself by the way he looks. And it basically is sort of like almost a mirror image version of Raylan Givens.
In a way, yeah. Quarles is, he's the carpetbagger. That's what we called the character in the writer's room before we landed on a name. We landed on Neil McDonough before we landed on a name. I just thought he would have a good time in the part. And we decided pretty early on, let's have him in a suit. A nice snappy suit, and he's from Detroit, Elmore's true stomping grounds. You know, we made that. We could have had these people come from anywhere, and we thought, let's have it all go back to Detroit.
The two of his stomping grounds are Miami and Detroit. I mean, those are two big places for him.
Yeah.
But tell me, though, what attracted you to the material in the first place? Because I one of the things we're talking about, those shifting points of view are very important in Elmore as well. And in reading, I don't really see you talk about that much. And I wonder if that was something that you gravitated toward.
Well, it is. I just love the idea that you could do a show where you do spend a lot of time with the quote-unquote bad guys. Boyd has become such a huge part of the show that I don't even think of him as a bad guy anymore. I mean, even though he kills people and robs and whatever, he's just part of that world. But that did attract me. And also, in Elmore's world, people will just talk, and hopefully it's interesting talk. And that's one of the big challenges for us. You know, it's one thing to adapt a novella. And the next thing is, what do you do for episode two? And now we have to sort of create our own Elmore Leonard material. But we try to hew as close as we can to his approach, his style, which gives a lot of, time to the nefarious ones. And that was something that I thought would really be fun. The other thing was simply that it's a show set in Kentucky, and it's not, set in either New York or L.A. or Chicago or Miami. It's set someplace that most shows haven't been set.
A place with its own politics.
Its own politics, its own ethos, its own culture, its history, all of this stuff, and stories. Stories that people haven't heard that much. And that's been fun, researching and stumbling upon these things and going, oh, man, let's do a arc of episodes about that, or let's make that a big chunk of the season. And also, he's coming home. He's a guy who he's got connections to the area. He doesn't really want to be there, so that's a nice conflict.
And the guy was pushed away from home to save him by an aunt.
Yes, yes, and you know, look for a different, better life away from the out of, from under the shadow of his father. So that was all intriguing. And then, you know, frankly, the big thing was when I was reading the novella, I got to that scene where Dewey Crowe is trying to come into Ava's and he sends him out and Dewey gets a shotgun and Raylan comes out and says, can you rack a load before I put a hole through you? And he doesn't pull his gun. And I thought, that is a great television hero. So many cops yell, right? So many cops would come outside, put down the gun! On the ground, you know, whatever. And Raylan doesn't do that. He just comes out and he's very matter of fact, very calm. He knows his skills. He knows what's going to happen if the guy doesn't do what he says. And I just like that. I thought, here's a very cool character. And listen, that's one of the hallmarks of Elmore Leonard is cool. You know, his characters are pretty cool. Whether it's Jack Foley or, you know, LaBrava or whoever, they're pretty cool.
My very cool guest sitting across from me is Graham Yost. He's the creator of Justified, which is on FX. It's third season. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. But one of the things you're really good at, too, we can go to so many things you've written, and even back to Boomtown, is that people love to talk about violence. You know, you just sort of roll it over in their heads and what it does. And I wonder where that comes from for you.
You know, I think this episode has aired. Yeah, I think it aired recently. And there was something where Raylan's in a crowded bar and Quarles has this face-off with him. And Raylan
we're taping the show.
Right.
Yeah.
And Raylan shoots a bullet in the air up into the ceiling. And later on, we see the hole in the floor of the room above. And as someone said, it was talking to one of the writers, that on our show, we try to say that the bullet goes someplace. And also that violence has consequences, and this world that they live in. If they shoot someone, they have to deal with it. Often it's just in paperwork. It's not as though Raylan is an incredibly introspective or distraught person over the violence in his life. I think he has a very matter of fact approach.
Except for
in
this season, which he shot a woman.
Except when he shot a woman, and it's like, wow, I've never done that before, and that was weird. And so it has some haunting aspect to him. And that's in, actually, the shooting of the woman is in Elmore's new book, Raylan.
I do want to finish up a little bit with this thing about the way you deal with people talking about violence in your work. I mean,
yes.
There's a thing often in cop shows that feels like discontinuity, where somebody gets shot and it never gets mentioned again.
Right.
In Elmore's books, people... They don't. They're not being self-reflective or distraught about the violence. They take some small amount of professional pride in it.
Yes.
And your Raylan is definitely that guy. That's, I think, maybe the point of departure from the way other people dealt with talking about violence in your work before.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the big difference. And that's Raylan, again, is a very, very cool character. I think that some of my other protagonists have been sort of heading in that direction. But... none of them have had the sense of humor that Elmore Leonard brings. And I think that's the other thing that really attracted me to this show. I started out in Half Hour, working on Full House and a Nickelodeon show called Hey Dude, and I loved writing comedy. So it was fun to work on a show where, boom, you know, where there is a significant amount of, hopefully, kind of odd, funny stuff like Elmore's writing. Boomtown wasn't a particularly funny show. Certainly The Pacific and Band of Brothers and Earth to the Moon, not so much. But that is something that I've always wanted to do, and I think that's one of the reasons why I said yes when I was sent the novella.
We'll take a break and come back. I'm happy to have my guest, Graham Yost, back with me. He's the creator of Justify It, which is on FX. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
I'm Jenny Rattlett, producer of The Treatment. If you like our show, you might also like The Business, KCRW's show about the business of show business, hosted by Kim Masters of The Hollywood Reporter. Find it on iTunes or on KCRW's smartphone apps.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. We're talking about Cool with Graham Yost. He's the creator of Justified on FX. One of the things you've got to get some real pleasure out of is creating these kind of operatic villains that you also dispatch. I mean, just seeing Margot Martindale last year, who I'd seen on Broadway, and so to see her show this kind of spine of steel as Max Bennett, it was almost like Pirandello watching the show last season. And you must have gotten an enormous amount of pleasure just finding these. First of all, I think your real gift as an EP is finding these women and getting to do things they hadn't done before.
It's one of the great joys, frankly, in this business. But I didn't, we didn't write Mags Bennett for Margot. Her face just popped up on my computer when the casting director, Cammy Patton, sent me the link. And Cammy said, "We think that Margot is the choice." That was her opinion. And I watched and I said, "You're absolutely right." And then we saw the first episode. It was directed by, that first episode, second season, was directed by Adam Arkin. And he, our editing suites are near the right, next door to the writer's offices. And he brought a few of us into the editing room to show us the scene at the end of the first episode where Mags poisons poor Walt McCready. And I remember looking at Fred Golan, the number two writer on the show with me, and Sarah Timmerman.
You were with him on Reigns, right?
Yeah, Fred worked on Reigns. Fred worked on Boomtown.
Yeah.
And Fred and I, we've been teaming up since then. And I just remember looking at them and going, "Wow, we've got a season." Because we could just see that Margot was doing something that we hadn't expected, that we can only hope for.
Because one of the things I guess I'd heard is that there's a point where, and you take another actor who was known for comedy, who's now basically playing Win Duffy on the show.
Oh, Jerry Burns.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was something where, and this has happened a few times, where, he just had one episode, two episodes, one scene in one episode and then a whole episode in the first season. And we just loved him. We just thought, that is a great Elmore-like bad guy. And he is hilarious. And, again, Elmore, the humor, he never likes his characters to make jokes, but he wants them to have a sense of humor.
And also a sense of professional pride in what they do.
Yes, absolutely. Whether good guys or bad guys, they're sort of they are good at what they do, and they like people to know that.
And that's something that almost is a working class kind of thing that sort of I find to be distinctive to you, that kind of professional pride in using your hand.
I grew up in a solid middle class home in the outskirts of Toronto. My dad, had a show on television all about movies. Really a manual labor family, but again, it's the job of every writer to try and imagine themselves in that world.
Did you do much of that kind of work at all? Did you have like manual labor jobs or anything like that?
Not really. I mean, I worked for the Canadian Pacific Railway. It wasn't manual labor, but it was a bizarre job. It was handing messages to trains going by at 60 miles an hour, telling them what sidings to pull over at so they didn't have a head-on collision in the middle of the night in Western Canada. It's a job I hope does not exist anymore. I hope it's all automated.
It sounds astonishingly dangerous.
It was wild.
Wow.
I know. Trusting like a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid with that job is not the smartest thing. But anyway.
My guest, who still seems to have all of his fingers and toes, is Graham Yost. He's the executive producer of the show Justified, which is on FX. It's a treatment, which you can hear at KCRW.com. But I do like that aspect because I think part of it must come from just their version of a pride of authorship, those characters. And there's certainly that in your work.
Yeah, when you get into these characters and what they're doing and they're reasonably good at their jobs, it's fun to get behind them and support them and give them their due. One of the things we've found with Justified is it appeals, and it doesn't get the biggest audience in the world. It's doing well. It's not doing spectacularly. But it does appeal to people across the political spectrum and across the country. And that's nice to know that it could be that it's Justified as the show that brings this nation together and heals our wounds and marches us forward into a better tomorrow.
And it took a Canadian to do it.
That's right. And now American citizen. I'm an American citizen since Reigns.
So. Which means you and Peter Jennings. I guess these Canadians have a big influence in our culture. But I just find it fascinating, this season of the show, there have been a lot of callbacks to the first season. There's a point where Win Duffy just sort of says, well, Raylan is a very angry man, which is a callback to the last line of the pilot.
Yeah, there's a sense with this season that we're kind of playing out a bunch of the things that we introduced in the first season. Raylan and his relationship with Winona, his ex-wife. What is going to happen there? And we, you know, we're not concluding it, but we took it through an arc over these three seasons. Raylan and his relationship with his father, as you'll see in the final episodes, that becomes a big part of where we're going. Raylan and Boyd, there's a certain amount. And we're sort of looking that this is the midpoint of the series at the end of the third season.
How far do you think you may go with it?
Probably like 6 years, I think, if we're lucky, if FX keeps inviting us back. But we can sort of see story ideas through six. Now, that doesn't mean that it couldn't go longer, but that's sort of what we're looking at. And there are certain things that we introduced in that first pilot with Winona and the father and Boyd that do arc out over these 3 years. And, you know, for the next half of the series, we'll come up with something new and follow those lines as well, but also try and find a bigger shape for over the next seasons.
What I thought was kind of interesting about the beginning of this season, it really felt like you were doing something that TV shows tend not to do, and it felt very Elmore to me, where you're acknowledging that Raylan's aging at the beginning of this mm-hmm. season. And I wonder where that came from for you.
You know, I mean, I can't just sort of say, you know, take pride of authorship in that. I think some of that is Tim. You know, Tim, I can't overstate how much of a contribution he makes in this show. I mean, he has just reams and reams of notes on every script, every scene, and goes over it with the writer. You know, on our show, whoever writes the episode then produces it. So they're working closely with Tim and the other actors and the director. And I think that sort of acknowledgement of aging was just something that attracted him. And there is that feeling in Elmore's world that people are always concerned: have they lost a step? You know, are they
generally they have lost a step?
Then generally, when we meet them, they have lost a step, and can they get that step back? Can they survive anyway? And they do compare themselves to either real or fictional characters of old. You know, I wonder how, I mean, especially Raylan. He's always wondering how he would stack up against, in Elmore's books, how he would stack up against the great marshals of yesteryear. And that's part of aging, too. So it's nice to embrace that. And to have a star who is fine with, you know, the character of his ex-wife saying, you know, I think you've lost a little bit, or you weren't performing in bed as well as I expected. And, you know, it makes it very freeing for us.
My guest is the ever youthful Graham Yost. His show is Justified on FX. This show is The Treatment, which you can hear at KCRW.com. But the show is physically darker this season. It's so much more inside than in past years. I mean, there are a lot that takes place in rooms.
Yes. And do you know why?
Why is that?
Money. We finally built a set for Boyd, a bar set, so that we wouldn't be on location as much. You know, we're doing a show that's set in Kentucky, and we shoot it in Southern California.
You can sort of tell by the tree line.
You can tell by the tree line. You can tell by the foliage. But and people will, you know, blog and say, well, that particular tree does not exist in Eastern Kentucky. And it's like, well, absolutely. But that's okay. On the other hand, people do feel that we have created our California, Kentucky pretty well. We did find this great small town, Green Valley, that serves for a lot of our Harlan exteriors. But it was simply, you know, it's hard to do a Marshall show and be on our Marshall set that much, because Marshalls are always out looking for people. That's what they do.
Well, as Raylan says in the book, basically they spend most of their time either babysitting people or chasing fugitives.
Yes. That's basically the job. So we needed to come up with other sets where, you know, Boyd could meet people. We needed a home set for Boyd. And so we came up, well, they'll get Johnny's Bar, and that'll become their home set. And then we wanted another set for Raylan, because we all, the writers, Tim, and I think the viewers, got sick of that damn motel room. So we got him out of the motel. And
would you say that's where he lived for the first two years?
The first 2 years. And into the start of the third season, is living in a motel.
One of the things I kind of love, and I mentioned this to Elmore too, and he gets a chuckle out of it. Basically, a guy who's taken what was probably a rental car that Lincoln Continental drives, and it's not a car he drives all the time, and that by this season has figured into being a character in the show.
Yes, the town car. Yeah, you know, I mean, the reality is they do drive a lot of stuff that they've seized. You know, they'll just drive them for a while. But And frankly, look, this is the business, right? We get things through the network. Can we feature this kind of vehicle or that? And they've been very understanding with it. I said, you know, the only way we can give those vehicles out would be to bad guys. And the advertisers don't want the bad guys in their new truck or whatever. So we just leave Raylan in the town car.
Well, I mean, it's so interesting to have found a show at this point that really touches on so many things that you've been doing on your own. I mean, a piece of material, basically a body of work in Elmore Leonard that dovetails so neatly with a lot of the things that you've been pursuing as a writer for most of your career.
Yeah. Well, I started reading Elmore back at La Brava, which was early to mid-'80s. So the chance to adapt his material and put a character on television each week that's an Elmore character was just – that was a big attraction to me. And I watched Out of Sight. I watched Get Shorty, and I watched the ones that weren't that good. I watched – well, Jackie Brown is one of the best, perhaps Elmore's favorite. And you could see what they did, what Tarantino did, what Scott Frank did, which was just really let Elmore be Elmore. And so that they were really my inspiration for how I wanted to approach this.
But this season feels the most like one of the Westerns to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and although what I find fascinating, too, is that you do one of the things that people don't do very often in TV, but Elmore always deals with the schism between races. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, that's key to him because, you know, they're basically they're African-Americans in crime. And nobody in TV quite seems to know what to do with it. And Elmore sort of takes pleasure in dealing with those the way those cultural differences come up in the underworld.
Right. And just go right at it. I mean, for us, it was – we felt in the first two seasons that the African-American characters we'd had, that the bad guys, because we've got, you know, Erica Tazel playing Rachel Brooks on the show as one of the deputies. But it had all been sort of this quasi urban kind of – these characters could have come from anywhere and be anywhere. So we were really looking for a story that felt particular to Kentucky. And that's when we stumbled on the various stories that led us to create the character of Limehouse and the locale of Nobles Holler. And it was just, you know, that's part of the fun is that we get to do research and find these stories and go, wow, that's different. That's interesting. You know?
And we should say Limehouse character played by Michael T. Williamson has the most – I mean, he has the best teeth since Gene Hackman in Get Shorty. It seems that
– That was his choice. T, you know, he showed up for work and he said, I'd like to get some teeth. And his thing was he just wanted teeth that reflected someone who was born probably in the 50s and didn't have the greatest dental care in the 60s. And so they're not modern teeth. But they're also not quite – I said, please don't make them, you know, Austin Powers. You know, I don't want sort of British National Health teeth of 1956 or something. But they have a character to them, certainly.
Well, Graham, thanks so much for being in the room with me this time. Please come back.
Oh, it was great to meet you, Elvis.
Great to talk to you again. My guest is Graham Yost. He's the executive producer of Justified on FX in its third season. This show is recorded and mixed at KCRW by J.C. Swadek. It is edited and associate produced by Jenny Radelet. I'm Elvis Mitchell. I'm not justified. It's The Treatment.
Find past episodes of The Treatment at kcrw.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Listen to The Treatment on demand on your smartphone with KCRW's apps. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.